It's Mark Yeagy here, wealth architect and lifestyle investor. Let's take your life to the next level. Welcome to the Wealth Architect Podcast. Hey, everybody, it's Mark Yeagy. Welcome to another edition of the Wealth Architect Podcast. Today, we have a frequent guest. I think we can call her a frequent guest. We've met several times. And she's the director of investor education at passiveinvesting.com, which is a pretty cool website. And she was featured on Bigger Pockets. We're going to get into all that stuff. And we're really going to be talking about money for tomorrow and take what you want from that. But the bottom line is, you know, my passion for educating people and teaching them about, you know, planning and things like that. We use money all the time. We might as well know about it. Our guest today is going to help us kind of decipher all that, give us a few takeaways so that we can get going on that. She's got some incredible chops, you know, 6,500 residential units, some car washes, self-storage units across 11 states. She's got a bunch of stuff. Let's say hello to Whitney Elkins Hutton. Hi, Whitney. Welcome back.
Thank you so much for having me, Mark.
Good to see you. So, you know, those of you who have listened and watched our podcast before, you know who this is. And she's got a breadth of knowledge along a lot of different different areas. And I really today brought her back on. We had a conversation after our last podcast to really talk about how we can do more planning and more specifically planning for the future. Right. So obviously planning is for the future, but I'm really talking about, you know, leaving a legacy, figuring out ways to, you know, set a goal and move toward it and then making sure that it doesn't go all away when you die. Right. You leave something for the rest of the people that you've left behind. And so you can teach them along the way. So let's get started and have a conversation about that. Tell us a quick little bit about yourself and then how you got into this money for tomorrow idea. And we'll go from there.
Yeah, no, thank you so much. So again, my name is Whitney Elkins Hutton. Where I'm at today, I'm the director of investor education at passiveinvesting.com. Also the founder of Ash Wealth. There I do financial coaching and mentoring. I didn't start off like this. I actually started off, in public health. My real estate journey really begins back in 2002. When I bought a house with a significant other, a month later, the relationship fell apart. I had a house, didn't know what to do with it. Rehabbed. I mean, everything in that property needed to be rehabbed. Green shag carpet, psychedelic daisies painted all over the walls. And so it got really scrappy. I bought a book from Home Depot, did most of the work myself. And then 11 months later, sold that property and made $52,000, but then realized that I hadn't been paying for any of my expenses, not the principal, interest, taxes, insurance, not even the utilities. And I was like, oh, hold on. The value I create in the world can be unhooked from the amount of time that I spend creating that value. And so that was really where my journey with money begins. It's also where my journey in real estate begins, because from there, you know, did several more live and flips and house hacks, scaled a 36 unit rental portfolio, single family, and then got into multifamily investing, both actively and passively. But that's really where my journey with money began is, you know, how does, I got really curious, like, how does money work? Like, how do the greats create not only net worth, like buckets of equity, but also passive income so they can go do what they want, when they want, with whom they want. And so that really started laying, you know, back in 2002, you know, my lessons that I learned over 22 years of investing really start laying the groundwork for the book and Money for Tomorrow, How to Build and Protect Generational Wealth.
So that leads us to what is that book about? Because generational wealth is important for a lot of people and nobody has the first clue of what to do about it. So let's start with that basis and foundation.
Well, unless you're born into like the Rockefellers or the Carnegies, you know, a family that is really deep rooted in this type of methodology, this type of lessons and learnings. Yeah, most of us are probably transitional characters in our life, meaning that, you know, maybe we are going to get a little bit of money from our parents, you know, maybe they're baby boomers. We're going to get a little bit of money. We're going to be able to like, you know, build upon that. But then, you know, what were the principles that allowed them to build their wealth? Or if you're building the wealth in your generation, what are the principles that are allowing you to do that? And so I really bring in this analogy because I think all of us have played board games growing up. I think most of us grew up with Monopoly. And so, but with any game, you have to understand the objective, then you have to understand the rules, And then you have to, in order to get really good at the game, you have to master a strategy. And so the objective, if multi-generational wealth is a game, the objective is to have enough money coming in to do what you want, when you want, with whom you want, and to be able to teach the next generation to steward the same. And so this isn't necessarily, you don't even have to pass down the money to the next generation. You have to be able to pass down the skills and the knowledge, the mindset, the values to the next generation. That's even more important than I think the money itself. So that's the objective. We can all agree that's the objective. Then what are the rules? What is it going to allow us to do there? Right. Well, we have to get really good at four skills. I know you can only see three if you're watching the video, but four fingers, four skills. These are what I call the rules. Now, here's the thing. Most investors get really good at two of them, and then they like either never master or they just like don't care about the other two. And that puts them behind the eight ball whenever they go to pass on wealth. The first rule you have to master is, how do you create wealth? Do you know how money actually works? Do you actually know those fundamental skills? You know, I coach soccer. And so I'm always, all the time, every time we like open up a practice, it's all about passing, running, dribbling, the boring stuff. Sure. Okay. But those are the things that we're going to build every other skill and every other strategy upon. Okay. So what are those fundamental skills that help us create wealth? And then how do we keep it? Right.
Right.
Most people jump from create to grow. They're really antsy. Let's get invested in the stock market. Let's do options trading. Let's do real estate investing. Let's do whatever, right? They get really antsy and they want to grow, okay? We do need time on our side. We do need to learn how to grow. But most importantly, if we can just keep what we made, that's going to put us in a really strong position to begin to grow. And then we have to be able to grow the wealth, okay? What are those seven core rules that we should pay attention to in order to grow our wealth effectively and efficiently? Most investors, you know, do a quasi okay job at some of this, but they miss out on some of the pillars of wealth that would actually help their investments perform better for them. And then how do we pass it on? Most people, when they think about passing on the wealth, they're like, yeah, I got my wealth, I got my trust, we're good. No, we have to think about like, what do we need to do to plan for our incapacity? Like, what if we don't die? Yeah. What if we are in some sort of state that allows us no longer to perform? Okay. And now we have to live off our portfolio now. How do we keep our health draining our wealth? How do we set up our estate? Okay. And I'm not a lawyer, but I can give you some, you know, pointers in the right direction to have a good conversation with a lawyer so you can, you know, make sure you're setting up the right system for you. But then most importantly, how are we setting up what we call an I love you plan to make sure that, you know, your executors train, they know what your wishes are, okay, that the estate transfers smoothly, okay, and then once it transfers to the heirs, what are they supposed to do with it? Have they been taught? Have they been trained? If you didn't have enough time to train them, do they know where to go get the resources? Do they know what your intentions were? And so really mastering those four rules. And then we get into the strategies. And I started cluing you in a little bit on some of the strategies in those categories, but we can dive down deeper in any one.
Well, yeah, let's talk about some of those things. But maybe the second one is, you know, people jump to growth without protecting. And so are you saying that people need to have an estate plan, like when they're, you know, just starting out? Should they be having their trusts all set up when they're just getting going? I mean, that's a lot of money to spend on attorneys when you're just starting out and you have no idea if you're going to even become huge, right? Mm-hmm. So how does that question get answered?
Well, so I'll answer the question, but actually the second category is learning how to keep wealth, not necessarily just protect it. I would say you setting up a will, like bare minimum, everybody should have some sort of will, because there are laws in your state that will, if something happened to you, you're young, you don't have much, you know, there are laws in your state that if you don't have a will or trust that will dictate how your assets are transferred. Really having a will or a trust is just you saying, I don't want to go by the state's laws. I want to go by what these legal documents say.
Right.
Okay. So that number one, setting up a will, you can actually probably, there are a lot of places online to get a free basic will put in place. So So it's just a matter of time, not necessarily a matter of expense. Setting up a trust, a little bit more expensive. But let's table that, because that's actually like a bigger conversation in the pass wealth on category. I think the key thing here is what most people don't realize is that they should actually have what we call a living will in place, healthcare directives and powers of attorney. That actually falls in that second tier, that second rule, that keeping wealth. Because, you know, you could slip, trip and fall. You don't have to be old. And, you know, you could get in a car wreck and that incapacitates you. We would hope that our mother, our father, our spouse, our sibling would be the next natural person that would be in charge of taking care of our health. But according to your state laws, that may not actually be the case. They may actually have to go to court to get guardianship over you in order to make healthcare decisions on your behalf. Let's just streamline the process and take the state out of it. Like, let's not spend thousands of dollars on this. Let's take an hour or two at a time and get these things set up in place. But here's the rub. The problem is most people don't want to think about this.
That's right. They want to do the ostrich, right?
Well, it can happen. It's not going to happen to me. I'm healthy. You know, I got in a car wreck back in 2000 and, you know, I was 25 years old. Okay, guys, I'm dating myself. I just told you my age. But yeah, long story short, my back was broke. And so I had these things in place. My parents could manage my health, like while I was in the hospital, they could help make healthcare decisions on my behalf. But that was something my parents had me do. Like if I had my own, would I have done that on my own volition? No, but wow. That's just how quickly, you know, things can change on a dime.
Sure.
So it's really that keep category. And we jumped to the last one, this number six. But even before then, there are five other things to think about. Not necessarily in order, but, you know, are you leveraging interest in your, in your wealth building appropriately?
Yeah.
You know, interest, you know, compound interest is the eighth wonder of the world. The problem is it cuts both ways. You're not always the receiver of that.
For sure. Well, I don't want to get off this topic of, you know, what happens at the end of your life or when something happens, because it happened to you and you were younger. I think it's an important topic to focus on. So
yeah, let's do it.
Let me ask you a couple of questions. What happens in general, not when you die, but when you are in, let's say you get in a coma. Let's use that example, right? What happens legally, the state, you know, what happens if you have nothing prepared for that event?
Yeah. So the doctors, the medical facility, they're going to have legal staff on premise. And if you have nothing in place, no living will, no DNR, nothing like that, you know, on record, they're going to go by what the state law dictates. And so essentially, in most states, and guys, I'm not a lawyer. Okay. So this is just, you know, me and my own experience.
We're just talking.
Yeah. Just talking. You know, you would essentially become a guardian of the state. Now, if you had a living will in place, now you've expressed your wishes of what I would like to have happen in certain situations. Okay. And in that living will, you would designate a healthcare representative. It could be anybody. It could be a friend, it could be a neighbor, it could be a parent, it could be a sibling, but that person is going to be contacted to, like, you know, start working through the medical system on your behalf. Now, they can't actually move money, right? They're just helping make medical decisions, right?
Yeah.
Now, when it comes down to costs and money, this is where the healthcare power of attorney is in play. And very rarely, I don't hear of anybody anymore having a living will without a durable power of attorney attached to it. Okay. In healthcare directives, like, it kind of comes as a whole package, but it's three instruments in one package that, you know, where you get to state what your preferences are, who your healthcare representative is, what are the extent of their powers? Is their decision-making powers strictly to your health? Or if you're going to be incapacitated for 6 months, say like in a coma, you know, are they actually going to be able to take make financial decisions while you're incapacitated, right? Otherwise, if you're incapacitated and you have none of this in place, you're going to fall, you know, according to the state laws, which probably places you under guardianship of the state. Now your family, your friends, your spouse, whoever, you know, has to go essentially open up suit against the state in order to get that back.
That's what I wanted to get at is like, you know, we don't want to talk about it, but the alternative is really bad. Like you have to go to lawsuits and somebody's got to spend some money on those lawsuits. And who's going to file a court case to spend money to keep you, you know, like who's going to pay for all that stuff? It's a really great question.
Hey, it's Mark Yeager here to tell you about our Cash Flow Machine trading program that's designed to teach you how to make safe, reliable income. Now, we shoot for 2 to 4% a month of income and growth in your portfolio. And we have courses to teach you how to do this yourself or inside a mastermind community. And the best part of that is it only takes about 20 minutes a week to implement. Now, while 2 to 4% a month doesn't sound like much, I show you exactly how we took my IRA from $111,000 to over $500,000 in just 19 months without huge risk. I'm not telling you this to brag, just to show you that you could do this too. So to learn more about this program, go to cashflowmachine.io. That's cashflowmachine.io, and you can learn more.
Now.
Well, and also time. Yeah. It's time and undue stress. Like say like you're married, right? You would naturally think your spouse would be able to make those decisions. Well, that's not the case in most states. The spouse would have to go sue the state. And, you know, maybe it takes like a week or 2 weeks. You know, all these healthcare decisions that have been made in the meantime that might be counterproductive to what you actually wanted.
Right. Okay. Well, we could go down the rabbit hole because I was going to say, what happens if you die? What happens to your bank accounts? All those things. Maybe you can just take a quick 30 seconds to 45 seconds to answer that question, because I found this eye-opening when I found out the answer. Go ahead.
Well, so, okay, when you die, that's where the will or the living trust, or not living trust. It is a living trust. Sorry. The whole living trust wills, they kind of get, you know, the legal terms get kind of mixed around. But this, a will or a living trust, this is where those two instruments come into place. Now, let's demystify a will really quickly. Most people think, my estate is really simple. I just need a will. That may be the case. Okay. But a will just essentially when you die and you have a will in place, your belongings, all your assets are going to move into what we call an estate. That estate, the will now is your executor's instrument to now sue your estate to get your assets. So it may only cost you like $300, $400, $600 in the front end to set up a will. But on the back end, with the will, your executor is now going to have to open up a lawsuit called probate in order to get your assets out of the estate to distribute them to the heirs. I did some research for our presentation. The cheapest on average is $7,000 for a probate, and it goes up from there. It can be like the average is like $20,000 to $25,000 to open up probate. Okay, so it may be, and that's for simple estates. Okay, yeah. So long story short, that's what a will is. Now, a living will, a living trust. Actually, you are no longer own your assets. You're moving them into the trust. The trust now owns the asset. The trust doesn't die. So when you die, the assets stay in the trust and they just move to another trustee or another set of beneficiaries and trustees are named according to the provisions in your trust. So the trust could continue to go on, right? There's rules that, you know, new beneficiaries and new trustees are named in subsequent generations, or it can spin off like smaller trusts, like say each one of your kids. They were a beneficiary of the trust. And so your trust ends, but they get a little, it spits off a little mini trust and the assets get distributed that way. Sure. So there's a million different ways to set up those trusts, but the trust doesn't die. And so you avoid this very public and expensive lawsuit, because that's what it is, called probate. And so the assets can transfer to the next generation, you know, with limited friction, very limited friction and expense, but it does cost a little bit of money on the upfront side. So like $3,000 to $6,000.
Lunch in any of this stuff, right? If you want to save money and just do a simple will off the internet, it doesn't cost you now, but it costs you in probate. Somebody, it costs your heirs in probate. If you want to set it up as a you know, family limited trust a living trust. It costs you to set it up, but it doesn't cost your family so much in probate. So it's like pay me now or pay me later kind of stuff.
Well, and you also get greater wealth control, generational wealth control with the living trust.
Right.
And so I get to put rules in place. Like, you know, if you have minors, one, the trust will, you know, help declare guardianship for the minor. But, you know, say I pass away, my daughter's 12, she's not going to get the whole trust. Like, we have a trustee that will be in place to manage the trust on her behalf. And then whenever she hits certain milestones and certain age marks, certain parts of the trust will then, you know, pass on to her. I can put in provisions there saying like, hey, like if you're, you know, an alcoholic, a drug addict or whatever, you have to, you know, go seek care and prove yourself out in these particular areas before you're going to get access to this type of, you know, these type of assets, this type of cash.
Right.
But most importantly, I'm setting up the structure for to pass on my values and to pass on the education that allowed me to build the trust in the first place.
How do you do that part?
Well, you can actually do this with a will too. I think the simplest way you can build this in, you know, to the trust, depending on how customized you want to get. One thing that my lawyer encouraged me to do was actually write a purpose statement to my trust. And so you can do a purpose statement to your will, but you know, the trust, you know, the tool is far more flexible to bend with the purpose statement. But in that purpose statement, I am essentially communicating, you know, what was my mindset? Like, what are, you know, who are we as Huttons? Okay. Yeah. What are our family values? What is the mindset? You know, what was my journey that allowed me to build this wealth? What are the skills that I had to master? The skills maybe that I had to find somebody to bring in. There I communicate for, you know, I encourage everybody to do this, but also I've done it for my daughter. There's a board. And so it's not like a formal board. We don't pay them, but like, you know, she knows who to go to for turn to for legal help, for tax help, for financial help. You know, if we're no longer around, my husband and I are no longer around. So, you know, and then also who's that network that she needs to have in place. So I'm teaching her those things through there, but I'm also teaching her like our family traditions, right? You know, this is what we do. We spend Thanksgiving with friends. We spend Christmas with family. And these are our wishes for, you know, you and, you know, hopefully you pass these traditions on. And so you can put anything in there. It's really a living document. And I think most people, when they start putting together a purpose statement for their trust, you know, it's like one or two pages and they can't really dream into it. But I encourage, you know, people like, just think about it. If something happened to you and you were gone, you hit that coma, you pass away, what do you want your child to know? Like, you know, you wish you could data download out of your head, put it into that document.
Sure. I love that. I think that's so important. And, you know, financial education is important, but, you know, I never really put it in the context of passing along your values. You know, I love that. I think a purpose statement is a really cool way to do it. Of course, you've written books and you have videos and all kinds of stuff that you're leaving behind by, you know, just being on this podcast. So they're going to be able to get to know you and know how you think a little bit by just watching some of the stuff that you've done. But I love having it in the trust. That's great. And by the way, you just did such a phenomenal job explaining, you know, the reasons for having a living trust and having a will. So thank you for that. Let's move to this last topic and then we'll maybe wrap it up here. And that is, okay, we've talked about a little defense here, right? We've talked about paperwork and lawyers and legal stuff. That's all defense. How about some offense? We talked about the eighth wonder of the world, which is compound interest and how it can work against you and for you. Let's talk a little bit about, you know, how maybe we should think about making money as little humans, growing humans. We're all growing humans, but going forward, how do we put all that stuff in place? What do you think?
Yeah. So in my book, Money for Tomorrow, I really put the growth category in like rule number three, like how do we grow the wealth, right? We've mastered create. We have a good grasp on how to keep it. Okay. But then like, how do we grow it? And so this is where I look to make investments that abide by what I call the seven pillars of building wealth. Number one, don't lose money. Okay. And it's, you know, Warren Buffett is credited for saying rule number one, don't lose money. Rule number two, see rule number one. But really what that rule is trying to teach us is to don't get knocked out of the game. Okay. If you get your capital back, you're not knocked out of the game. Okay. Like, you know, I think a lot of, people in the equities market right now and the private real estate market, like we probably all have like one or two investments in our portfolio that's not performing as we wish it would.
That's for sure. You know?
But, you know, if the operator is doing what they need to do in order to steward the wealth across the finish line in 3 to 5 years and everybody gets their capital back and a little bit on top of that, we're still in the game. We get to live another day. So that's rule number one. Rule number two, cash flow. And people sometimes switch rule number two, which is cash flow, with, pillar number three, which is equity growth. For me, I like cash flow first. Because I can always reinvest the cash flow, but it gives me an indication on how well that asset's performing into today's market. Now, each of these we can dive down way deeper. I do in the book as well. But number three, equity growth. I'm looking for assets that not only take advantage of natural market appreciation, but how can I force equity growth on the asset and can put a lot of that in my control. Number four, tax benefits. I just got off a financial investing call earlier today with several investors, and half of them are trying to figure out how to invest for tax benefits this year. They don't care about the cash flow and the equity. They want the tax benefits, for which for me is kind of completely bizarre, because I really encourage people to look at tax benefits as the icing on the cake. Sure. We want the other three pillars in place first, and then, you know, can we get tax benefits? Can we eliminate that tax liability in our portfolio, or kick the can down the road and take advantage of step up in basis later on when our estate passes? So those are the four core rules. On top of that are three other rules or pillars that are kind of like gas on the fire. If you can get them, awesome. Smart use of leverage. Okay, that's why a lot of us love real estate and other assets that take advantage of leverage. But just like interest, that's what we're saying. It can work for you. It could also work against you. But you can use leverage wisely. And then inflation hedging. What are those assets that you're going to be able to adjust the income and the pass-through on the expenses as the market grows? Now, I know that's not the traditional definition of inflation, but I think that's one that's easier for people to wrap their heads around. The traditional definition of inflation hedging is, can you lock in your costs today and let the inflation of the dollar erode the value? So say you bought a house. All of us bought a house, or I would say a majority of Americans, they refinanced their house in 2020 if they could. 2021, when interest rates are 2.5%, 3%. Sure. Okay. That loan might have felt stung a little bit then, but after 4 years, the inflation of the dollar and that interest rate now are deflating the value of that loan. My loan from 4 years ago on my house does not feel that expensive now. Okay. And 10 years from now, it's even going to feel less expensive. Okay. Sure. Yeah. Okay. And then, you know, operator, the last piece is the operator. So you have to invest with experts. Now, either you have to be the expert in whatever asset class you're going into, or you have to invest with experts. So your job then, if you're going to invest passively, is to become an expert at finding the experts.
Got it.
So this isn't the time to like go invest with your buddy who's never done that investment before and just kind of hope and pray everything turns out. The wealthy invest with experts. Either they are the expert or they find the expert.
Wow, good stuff. I mean, I think we could probably talk for another hour or two and go deeper into all these things, but I think we should leave it there and leave it a little bit to the imagination and maybe for your instruction through the book. I mean, I'm highly recommending just hearing what I'm hearing today, that this is a wealth of knowledge and something that I have a feeling the way you explain things is simple, but necessary. So everybody run out and get this book. It's Money for Tomorrow. And maybe you could tell us where we can get it and how we can get it and how we can get more of you.
Oh, awesome. Yeah. So Money for Tomorrow, you can find that on Amazon. So the full title of the book is Money for Tomorrow, How to Build and Protect Generational Wealth. You can also pick it up on biggerpockets.com at biggerpockets.com/moneyfortomorrow. There you're going to get some videos that help you walk through the various principles in the book. And then you can find me at ashwealth.com. And then if you're interested in investing with experts, say in multifamily and other real estate asset classes, you can find me at passiveinvestingwithwhitney.com.
Investingwithwhitney.com. Wow. Okay, cool. I think it's simple, but it's long. But I think it's great. Hey, listen, thanks again for being a great part of the show. I know we love talking to you. And every time we talk, we have a new branch of knowledge that we get to go down. And you're always so great at explaining it to everybody. So thanks for being here, Whitney.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks so much again, Mark.
Yeah, my pleasure. And those of you that are listening and watching, remember what I always say, never give up your power in your health, your wealth, or your time. Have a great day, everybody, and I'll see you next time. Take care.
You've been listening to the Wealth Architect Podcast with Mark Yeagy. Follow us on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Like and subscribe on YouTube. Share and tell your friends. See you soon.